Somebody here, you were next.
Where do we stand in the state politically? Meaning, is there any chance at all in the legislature to alter or amend the original Fast Track LD?
We're working on that, and we have people that are writing legislation now. You know, what's amazing is that LD 2283 passed unanimously. I had a conversation with Peter Mills about 9 months ago. He voted for it. He never even read it. Okay? Half of them never read it. I ran into Rob Benson, who's running for the House up in Washington County. He never read it. And so legislators, they've all been sent this film, for instance. And we are going to push them to amend that, or at least what we, at the very minimum, they should be talking about a moratorium on industrial wind until we have the time to really assay what's happened on Kibbe, what's happened on Stetson, what's happened on Vinyl Haven, what's happened on Mars Hill. But it's a cabal of people in Augusta. The governor is one of them. His puppeteer, I probably shouldn't be so rude to say that the governor has a puppeteer, but he does, and it's Severin Beliveau. Okay? And the whole cabal of former heads of CMP, which, you know, CMP is now owned by Iberdrola, the Spanish company, which is a big wind producer. It's one that has just suggested a 100-turbine project or a 50-turbine project just east of this project. There's a cabal of people, and they're smart people. They're very smart people. And they talked our government into providing these huge subsidies in spite of what happened. Let me give you an example of LD 2283. Through the Freedom of Information Act, we requested information that was sent into that governor's task force. And we found memos from Rob Gardner, who's Angus King's partner in Highland Wind, or Independence Wind. Memos telling the board exactly what they had to put into the law so it would make it easier for them to develop it. And one of them was, make sure citizens don't have the right to complain about the visual impacts. That's in the law, okay? And I have to be honest, too. If I was sitting on that committee 2.5 years ago or whenever it was, I might have made the mistake, too. I might have ended up supporting some law like that without thinking, okay? I might have made a mistake. These people got caught up in the euphoria of, yes, we've got to get off fossil fuels, which is right. We need green energy, which is right. And they went and they passed a bill that they didn't vet thoroughly with scientific analysis.
Hi. I've stood under a couple of windmill farms, and I'm really confused because I'm really curious where the meter was on the film that you, because I've never heard a sound like that, and I've been underneath it. So I guess I'm wondering, where is the sound the loudest?
That's a really classic question. It's actually something that wind developers very often do, is they'll take people and put them at the base of a turbine because it's one of the places where, yes, you can hear it, but it's not totally offensive.
Plus, you expect it to be louder.
Yeah.
And I guess, so is there a range of, it gets louder in a certain,
you know what,
distance?
What's happened in our case is that they had a sound model that was developed by their sound consultant, which said that we were not going to hear anything. We're within a half a mile. We have emails. We have personal emails from FIW, from Fox Island Wind, saying,
Baker,
we're not going to hear it. The sound of the leaves, everything will cover it. You might hear a faint whoosh, whoosh. The fact of the matter is they can't do enough studies to figure out what's going to happen. I can walk to the bottom of my driveway, and the sound is different from there. As I walk up the driveway to my house, it gets louder. If I'm in my bedroom upstairs, it's even louder.
So on the film, it just seemed incredibly loud.
It is. Oh, yeah. That's the way it is.
It is. And that's
yeah.
the way it is.
Yeah,
it can't be that loud.
But
yeah.
You're absolutely
how
right.
How far away is your house?
A half mile.
2,440 yeah. feet.
But you're absolutely right. They're now, I think, 17, wait, no. There are seven or eight states, there's lawsuits because of the noise. It's a serious, serious problem.
Well,
and the contours of the land make a big mm-hmm. difference.
They have a law that says you can't go over 45 decibels at night, 7 p.m., 7 a.m. And it's regular 49 decibels on my front porch. And Mr. Baker is claiming that that's not true. But but we'll prove that it's true. But it's only going to turn it down for us. You need to make sure it doesn't get here.
So does it get louder as it, the faster it goes?
We'll think about it. Yeah, it's louder and faster, absolutely. But think about it, if you're standing under it, the sound's emanating out 250 feet above you. It's going over your head, and it goes out, and it attenuates at a certain rate. But in mountainous areas, acoustical engineers have assured me that you can hear these things 2 to 5 miles.
You can. Away. Even on violin, you can hear it over 2 miles away.
The one point I'd like to make also is wind shear. And wind shear is something that happens when there is nothing happening on the ground. It's still, not a breath of air. You can hold a candle and it's not moving. But the 300 feet up in the air, or however tall those things are, whipping around, there's a gale. So the wind turbines are chugging around, and everything else is perfectly
dead still on the ground, so you can hear a pin drop.
That's really abusive.
And that's the way it is regularly. That's the normal mode. Wind shear means faster somewhere than somewhere else. And so there's a gradient that goes up and gets very fast higher up. And this is something that they told us, if there's wind to blow the turbines around, there'll be wind in the trees right next to you and you won't be able to hear them.
It's not true. Not true.
Dead lie.
And I just want to follow one thing up on that.
There's so much information.
You know it. But out on Fox Island, the reason why they don't want to turn the turbines down, because if they turn them down, what is it, 2 decibels, they have to reduce productivity by 15%.
Yeah, and they're losing money already.
Okay, if they turn them down 4 decibels, they lose 25% efficiency.
My name's Sonia Acevedo. I work with Maine Earth First, and we've worked with Friends of the Boundary Mountain on the KB and Sisk Mountain issues, and more recently with the Friends of Lincoln Lakes. And this is a question I think that the Friends of Ragged Mountain maybe know the answer to. I'm wondering how the permitting process in this area is different than the unorganized territories as far as getting the permits to build these things, and what companies in this area would benefit specifically from doing that development on Ragged Mountain.
I have a suggestion. I mean, does somebody know the answer to that?
Yeah.
Okay. it's like 10 minutes left, and
okay,
that's easily an hour discussion, as I see it. So can you do that offline?
If there's someone I can talk to after, Meg and Ryan.
Mm-hmm.
He's got email and all that stuff. Another question right here.
Yeah. Very quick question. That was the other night was at a presentation in Rockport about wind power, and the gentleman there, Des Fitzgerald, I think it was talking about the silent partner. That is, not to worry about the investors. They're just invisible people that just supplied money and so on. Now, who are these folks, and who are these silent partners that are powering these?
We need to spend $15 million. We have a $9.5 million RUS on Rural Utilities Service loan. That's the investment, that's the lending arm of the DOE, right? And that's not approved yet because they don't like the way it's set up. So we're still working on construction loans out there. It's been a year, right? So, but separately, they can sell tax credits. The IRS has set up an investment tax credit so that another for-profit company can make use of the tax credits. Somebody's making a lot of money, needs some credits to reduce their taxes. Right. Yeah. Since we're a nonprofit, we can't reduce any taxes, so we can sell them to somebody else. Some guy gave us $5 million for these tax credits, which I think it's set up as a $5 million tax interest free loan. In 5 years, we have to buy it back from him. But he's used all those tax credits in the meantime.
Yeah.
And then there are what are they, RECs, renewable energy credits, that corporations and coal-fired power companies and universities need to say they're spending so much of their energy dollar on renewable energy. And since they don't directly do it, they can buy the ability, it's like a cap and trade kind of thing,
yeah.
They can buy the ability to do that. So those are the side up.
Well, let me just say in the case of the Highland Mountains, the land is owned by a shell company called Beirut LLC, registered in Delaware, and they register all these companies in Delaware because they don't have to expose the investors. In the case of the Highland Mountains, we're very confident that it's Yale University Pension Fund.
Yeah.
I'm kind of curious, the windmills over Vinyl haven't been in business about a year.
Yeah.
What kind of efficiency and what kind of reliability service interruption?
I don't know that, but my guess they're about 10%. They're saying they're up a lot, but it's not. They're not. Yes?
Just in the spirit of wanting to know more about wind energy, I would offer these websites to take a look at. The Natural Resources Council of Maine, National Renewable Energy Laboratory.
Not them.
Not them.
We're going to say DOE.
Sierra Club.
DOE.
And Union of Concerned Scientists.
Okay, the NCR.
NRCM.
Oh, NRC.
No, he said the
NRCM.
Natural Resource Council of Maine.
They came to visit us.
Unfortunately, they were very instrumental in passing the expedited law. Okay, and Rob Gardner used to be the head of the Natural Resource Council. They do a lot of good work in the state. I'm not opposed to them. But if you look at their website, they have some of the other folks that you're talking about. When you start to look at those, for instance, you find out that these agencies have contracted out with people who have done the research who work for the wind industry.
Right.
You have to be very careful when you look at information, because it's very easy to get swept in by information from, for instance, there's a group.
We did.
A group in Maine called the Maine Renewable Energy Association. Well, who funds it? TransCanada, Independence Wind, First Wind, Reed and Reed, Chimbro, okay? And they spout out all the stuff. They quote a lot of the stuff that comes from those exact websites that you're talking about. There's also a National American Renewable Energy Association. You got to be careful. Don't get it from the power companies, and don't get it from the wind developers.
Reed would care, yeah.
How would you characterize the opposition? Is it static? Is it growing?
We got a lot of positive. A lot of people are just silent. They don't want to scratch the surface too much. You know, we've gotten, since the New York Times and the Boston Globe articles, we've gotten people come by saying, hey, read your article, good going, that kind of stuff, where we weren't getting that stuff before. Then there's a, you know, part of the crowd that is sort of vindictive and vicious and wants to write all kinds of nasty things about us. And most people don't scratch the surface, go below scratching the surface, so they don't really know. They don't really know. They think their light bill is less. It's not. As long as they think their light bill is less, it's okay to sacrifice those poor people up by the turbines. So, yeah.
How many residents would you say in Highland Haven are adversely impacted by the noise?
There's 18 families.
Out of a total of?
350.
And we're
kind of. Others are silent.
No. We have some support, but once again, they live over there. They don't hear them, and they say, "Boy, it's just terrible what's going on up your way." And I say, "Well, how about give me $400,000 for my property loss?" Oh, not doing that.
Do you listen to your concerns at all?
The Island Institute.
I introduced myself to Phil Conkling the other day, and he was not pleased to know who I was.
I have to say that the Island Institute has been one of the largest disappointments. They were instrumental in educating the islanders to all the pros and cons, supposedly, of wind power, and we believe them. Their mandate was to take care of the islands in the archipelago and the ecology there, which was supposed to include the residents. And we have been abandoned. And they just seem to be marching on to more of these projects. They want to put them up on other islands. And they're not even acknowledging that we have problems. In fact, somebody will be here in a couple weeks from the Island Institute talking about energy. And it would be interesting if people would ask them about what, you know, they call our project an unqualified success. But they're allowed to have 10%. You know, we're the 10% that get swept under the rug. So that's the cost of doing business.
So I live on Ragged Mountain. Besides signing petitions and coming in and talking.
Good, you're going to win this fight. I just want you to know.
I mean, you know, how can we be more proactive? What would you suggest?
You have to keep learning. You have to keep unified with everybody in your neighborhood.
Financial support.
Yeah.
If you can do something, if you can do something, if you have a skill, do it. Offer it up.
If you think you could, if you think you could. No, I gotta say, if I run into this, we run into this enough. There are people who really would like to support us, but they have no skill. Unfortunately, not everybody is skilled at doing something.
But everybody can write to Augusta.
They can.
Everybody can write, email, call, and make people in Augusta absolutely miserable.
They can show up in LURC hearings for us. We'll be here for you.
But I would like to say that the Friends of Ragged Mountain organization has existed since August of this year. We have a Facebook page, Friends of Ragged Mountain, and we also have an email address, which is friendsofraggedmountain@gmail.com, but you have to put a dot between each word. But we'd welcome having you contact us, look at the Facebook page, and we could not do what we do here if it hadn't been for support of the Lindgrens, and also Jonathan Carter, and the Forest Ecology Network, and all of these other people in all these other communities that have gone before us. So we are very lucky not to have to invent the wheel from the very beginning because of the experiences of these people, and we owe them a debt of gratitude for not only what they have gone through in their own experience. I know they've been working on these things for years, and it's going to save us a lot of trouble educating ourselves. So let's have a round of applause, please. In addition to the petition that Jonathan Carter is sending around, I didn't mean to interrupt, there's still time for questions.
Well, there isn't.
Well, anyway, there is a petition for Jonathan Carter's group going around. I encourage you, please all sign it. And there's an additional one for Friends of Ragged Mountain. Please sign that one as well. And we'll have extra copies at the back door as you leave. And thank you so much for coming.
Please come back.
And this lady back here.